Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a fascinating subject today, an equally fascinating lady who is going to discuss it with us. We're going to be talking with Brooke Carey, and she has written a book about becoming the accidental warden. Brooke Carey, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Brooke, I don't know that many women would have ever considered even taking the position of being a warden of a prison, but your story had so many different twists and turns to it. It was quite interesting to read it. Give us a little bit of background. You are the vice president, or you were the vice president for Century 21 Real Estate Corporation. You've got a master's of science degree from Pepperdine University. You have been involved in marketing and management. You're living currently with your wonderful husband in San Antonio, Texas. How in the world were you ever chosen for something to being like a prison warden, for heaven's sakes? I don't know of many people standing in line, raising their hands, saying, oh, please, choose me. What? How did this come about?
Well, you're so right in your comment about most people wouldn't want to do that. And in 1975, when this happened to me, I was running several companies, and one of them was a career counseling and job finding business, mainly for men. But I had a clientele of really smart, management-oriented women. And I used to read the classified ads looking for positions for my clients. I happened to see this ad from the Department of Corrections in California. And I, being a very well-practiced ad reader, I figured out that they couldn't say they wanted a woman, but they wouldn't hire a man.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, this was in 1975.
I was reading through the lines, and they couldn't say only women can apply, but I figured that out. So I found a couple women clients of mine and called them and said, you know, this is a pretty good opportunity. It's going to pay $30,000 a year, which in those days was a lot of money for women.
Mm-hmm.
And they all said, forget it, like you said.
Now, those are smart gals.
That's right. And I went home that night, and I said to my husband, you know, women can't expect to get ahead of anything if they don't never take any risks. And he looked at me, and he said, well, why don't you do it? You've got the credential. Well, I thought, well, that might be kind of fun to learn more about that. So without any thought at all, I sent in my resume. And the next thing I know, in March, I got a letter from the corrections department saying, we've screened 385 women, and we've chosen you and two others. Come to California for the interview.
Amazing. So, amazing.
So
now,
I didn't have a college degree at the time, but I was attending graduate courses in college. But actually, I didn't have any college degree at all.
Now, this is very significant. When I was reading this, I thought, there had to be something behind this because of the fact that usually, for someone to take on that positioning, they really, you would have thought, were such a stickler. And if they had 350 applicants, why would they choose someone that at the time did not have a degree? And boy, you found out a lot. Now tell us, this is why I think life is so interesting. It's people like you that did exactly what you did and said, why not try? Your husband said, well, why don't you go ahead and do it? You're perfectly qualified. Of course, husbands often have so much confidence in their wives. They say, go ahead, you can do this. And you go, okay, fine, I'll try it. Now, when you went into this, you know, this was something you didn't have a clue about. I mean,
That's
I would
right.
think you'd have to have some kind of experience, either in the police department, military police, something that has to do with the criminal environment.
Well, but, I was a business consultant, and they told me they were looking for a very skilled administrator. And that sort of assuaged my concerns about it, because I am a skilled administrator.
Mm-hmm.
They did not tell me at that time, and I didn't learn it till the year was almost over, that they had appointed my two associate wardens to run the prison behind my back, and I was to be the figurehead, because the law required in that job a woman. And so I thought I was to run the prison, and that was wrong. They were running the prison.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And I only talked to my boss once after I got hired, and I thought it was because I was doing such a good job. But no, my associate wardens were talking to my boss every day behind my back.
Amazing.
So there was a lot of politics going on, and I'm not a politician, obviously. That's what makes it such an interesting story, because you can't imagine all the things that happened to me.
So here we are. You have to go to a particular place called Frontera, California.
Yes.
Frontera. Tell us about Frontera.
Well, they called it Frontera because when children would write to their mothers in prison, they didn't want it to say California Correctional Facility, because a lot of mothers never told their little children about being in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So they would just write to their mother at Frontera, California, and the letter would reach them that way.
Amazing.
So Frontera was the prison. And my first day was so funny. About 11 o'clock in the morning, I'm going through my in-basket trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do, and there's a big ruckus going on down the hall. Down the hall was the hospital wing of the administration building, and there was a riot going on. So without any thought at all, I rushed down the hall, because I'm a verbal person, as you will see by interviewing me today. And it never occurred to me that there was something that I couldn't handle verbally. Well, when I got to the melee, these women were on the floor fighting and socking at each other. And there were maybe 15 women there, fist fighting. And so I rushed into the milieu and said, come on, we can work this out or something. And at that point, my staff about had a heart attack, because I didn't realize that the state of California does not recognize a hostage situation. So if I'd been taken hostage, they wouldn't be bargaining for me. I'm on my own.
And the thing was, you were just responding to a situation. See, this is what's so interesting. They just said, here, you've got the job. They chose you because they figured you were naive enough that you wouldn't even ask questions.
That's right.
And you'd walk in and they just say, here you are, you've got a desk, you've got your office, you've got the title, aren't you pleased, isn't that wonderful? And here you on the very first day, these women, and they're unleashing a lot of stress of being incarcerated, plus whatever pushed the button of whoever started this fight, and they're just in there hammering away at each other. And you walk in and you just like, you would do like a mother would do, and you would say, wait a minute. And I say mother, because really, that's the way we moms are. You go and
that's
say, oh, come
right.
on, stop this nonsense. You break it up right now. There's no, you know, we'll take care of this.
Donna, you have a very, very clever tact on this. You're right on target, my friend. You've never been in prison, I'm sure, but you were right on target with
yeah.
that.
And they're just saying, you just look at them like a bunch of kids and say, this is ridiculous. What are you doing this? And so, like you said, your staff is having a heart attack thing. Oh, my God, they'll take her hostage.
That's right.
It's like a Hollywood movie. This
it
should
was.
Be made into a movie, by the way. I think this would be just so so wonderful, although it probably would embarrass the administrative people. They may not even be alive anymore, half of them. But the serious side of this is that there is that condition, and I don't know that that has been changed. The hostage situation is not acceptable. So whoever would be taken hostage, they're not going to be allowed to be, quote-unquote, legal tender for anybody.
That's right.
But I thought that your perceptions about what you were going through And you talk about yourself quite a bit in the book, about how it was so important for you to be able to do everything right. You wanted to have a good environment. You wanted to go in and you really wanted to go to work. They didn't want you to go to work.
I didn't know that, you see. It was really almost laughable because they were trying to keep this from me, that I wasn't in charge. And toward the end of my sojourn there, we had a riot. And we rounded up all the people who were in the riot and put them in the psychiatric hospital, which was the only place I had where the doors would lock. And I was kind of proud that I had found the troublemakers, and I was finally going to take charge. Because the troublemakers, there were about 60 of them, kept everything in an uproar all the time. So we couldn't really do any rehabilitation or training or anything. And so the minute that the state found out that I had a lockup unit, they sent somebody down and told me I couldn't have it. And I thought that was interesting because all the men's prisons had lockup. But they, what they wanted to do with the women's prison was very strange. And I don't want to talk here without taking a breath, but they were trying to do the entire affirmative action program for the Department of Correction on the women's prison.
Oh, good grief.
So in order to, they lumped all the numbers together and said, okay, now if you need a boiler operator, you have to hire an African-American female. Well, boiler operators are normally come from the Navy, and they didn't have any boiler operators female at that time in the Navy. So I had a lot of problems trying to just staff the place. I sound a little frustrated. As I think back on it, I had to take a lot of deep breaths and feel pretty frustrated about a lot of things that happened.
What I thought was a hoot is that there was a woman by the name of Florence who gave you a tour of the facility.
Yes.
When I found out about Florence, I just howled. I thought this was a hoot. She said, I'm the superintendent's assistant secretary, but I'm not staff. I'm a resident here. Didn't you know that? You've got one of these. I think you would have thought you were in the cuckoo's nest.
Well, she was a very good-looking woman, and she was also, by the way, a doctor's wife.
Oh, wow.
So she was a very classy, well-dressed, in her own clothing. I could never have guessed that she was an inmate. And so that's probably why they hired her to work in the office, because she was a very classy lady and smart. But then, as you saw in the book, as I got into the first building that we were touring, it turned out to be the schoolroom. And all of a sudden, I smelled something burning. And I turned to Florence, and I said, you know, I think there's a fire in here. And she looked at me condescendingly and said, oh, Mrs. Carey, haven't you ever smelled marijuana?
I mean, really, this could be a cuckoo nest special.
And I said, of course not. How would I know about marijuana? So I was kind of the fat, dumb, and happy, I guess I'd have to say.
Oh, my goodness. Now, when you were going into the institution, there was a big sign that you saw out in the front of the building. It was both in English and Spanish. It said, it's a felony to bring contraband into the institution by order of the superintendent, Mrs. Brooke Carey. You didn't have a clue about any of this, and just a short time before, you'd been smelling marijuana burning in the halls.
That's right.
So this is absolutely unbelievable, but yet this is the real world.
Well, a lot of these drugs got smuggled in stuff mm-hmm. like bath salts. So it'd be some inmate's birthday, and everybody's all excited with their birthday, and they're smuggling in drugs in the bath salt. And with the Manson girls, who were there.
Oh, we've got to talk about the Manson girls.
They
That's
got a lot of mail, which had smiley faces. And the smiley faces would be, in the letter, would be painted yellow with a yellow marker. And what I didn't understand was that the smiley faces that were painted yellow, it's because they had put marijuana on them or some drug, and they could lick it off the paper. So I didn't figure that out for quite a while. We didn't have a security officer like the men's prisons because they wouldn't give us a budget for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the security officer, And it meant that in addition to everything else I had to do, I had to read all the mail that was coming in and make sure that there wasn't any escape plan being hatched.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the warden reading everybody's personal mail. It was a funny situation.
You had to be approved by the governor in your positioning. And I Jerry Brown followed his father, and I think his name was Pat Brown,
yes,
in California. And I just found it so interesting because this man was not a pleasant individual to deal with, and the last thing they wanted was a thinking, action-oriented female, which is exactly what you were. And again, we're talking about the 70s here. Tell us about your interaction with Jerry Brown.
Well, I heard that he wanted to meet me because, after all, he was appointing me, which I learned after the fact. I wasn't being hired. I served at the pleasure of the governor. So he decided he would like to meet me. So I flew up there, and his driver met me, and we went in Berkeley to a student restaurant, the kind that has sawdust on the floor, because he was doing some meetings at the university then. So I got there first, and I'm sort of sitting there, and very shortly he walked in with another man that he didn't bother to introduce, and I didn't know whether he was a bodyguard or who he was. But in any case, Jerry Brown is a very, very smart man, and he has this piercing gaze, very intelligent. I respect him a lot. But he doesn't like women like me. And after we had this luncheon in which he spoke Latin to his friend, and I sort of, the only thing he said to me was, he turned to me suddenly with his sharp eyes, and he said, "Well, you've never been a warden before. What makes you think you can be a warden?" And I felt like saying, "Well, you've never been a governor before," but I thought that was pretty smart alecky, so I didn't say anything. But that was true. He'd never been a governor before.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly knew what he was doing. He was in charge of everything. And suddenly, he got up and said, "Well, that's it," and he walked out and left me with a check.
Yes, right. A typical political move.
And then the office in Sacramento called me the next day, and I said, "Well, what's the feedback?" And he said, "Oh, he didn't like you." I said, "He didn't like me. I was on my best behavior." They said, "Well, he thought you were too confident. He doesn't like confident women."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how can you do the job I'm trying to do if you don't have self-confidence?
No, but that wasn't the point. That wasn't the point. And that is what makes, again, your story so fascinating. And I think it's marvelous that you've taken the time to write out the story with all the details, because it gives a picture, especially for women, a picture of insight into the times that the discrimination against the woman, especially a thinking woman, was so strong. But all these laws were starting to come into play, and they had to fulfill certain designated obligations relative to those laws. And so it's like, let's fake it, and then we'll make it.
That's right.
And so that's what they happened.
One of the interesting things was, they had, at that time, there were 13 prisons in California, and one woman's prison among those. And so the punishment for a lazy or incompetent correctional officer was to transfer him down to the woman's prison. That was the punishment.
Oh, yuck.
So my whole staff, for the most part of men, were lazy and incompetent. And many of them had been there so long that they had weeks and weeks and weeks of time off coming. So they were, even though they were on the rolls, they were never there. So I didn't really have enough people to run the place and keep the doors locked.
You bring a point out in your book that there were no operation manuals for prison. Now, when you think that you're dealing with the lives of hundreds of people, I like to think that maybe they've got one now, but perhaps not. Who knows? But when you think about, again, going back to the 70s, just people coming in, dealing with hundreds of incarcerated individuals, women have different needs than men do. the prison system in so many ways was so archaic, and it still is in a lot of its methods, but you had this environment that, my goodness, you just, how in the world could you even get through the first month?
Well, the first month was really strange because I was a newcomer to California, and what I didn't realize was that they were about to have a physician strike. And I went to get a checkup as soon as I arrived there, and my physician, my new physician, said, "You really need to have a hysterectomy. So I think you should have it now before the strike, because if you need it a month from now, there won't be any doctors." So I had an emergency hysterectomy 2 weeks after I took the job. Now you imagine, I'm dying to get to work. I don't want to be seen as somebody hanging back, and I want to work and move forward. And here I am trying to recuperate from the surgery. It was just awful. And so I decided to make the best of my time. So I got all the penal code, every page of it, and sat and read the entire penal code for the state of California while I was recuperating.
Incredible. Now, you have a comment in your book that I found fascinating. The American society in general is male supremacist, so it is consistent that prisons mirror the social dynamic. Female offenders are confined in a system designed, built, and run by men. Because the numbers of female felons are relatively low, there are no economies of scale in meeting their special needs. That is something that I don't know many people would give thought to.
Well,
and the women that were in this prison were all there for felony counts, correct?
Yes. In fact, the definition of a felon is someone who's been convicted of an offense for which the punishment is imprisonment in a prison, not a jail. And that's what a felon is. And I didn't know that either at the time.
Interesting.
So a lot of those women had committed crimes against things, not people, like credit card fraud. So they weren't, I didn't regard them as being dangerous. But then there were, of course, the women who were the girlfriends of the Mexican mafia and the Black Guerrilla family and the white supremacist group, and they were dangerous. And so the first day I went out onto the campus, I didn't know if somebody was going to leap out with a buck knife and kill me or not. And so it was a little precarious.
You mentioned a woman, Marge or Madge Culver.
Yes.
And you said this was a woman that you had a great deal of regard for because she was the captain of correctional officers at the time.
She's a little bitty lady.
But, boy, she was a powerhouse.
Yes, and in fact, I connected with her after I wrote the book and we spoke. She went on to be the prison warden at Chino Prison. And then they moved her up north in Sacramento and put her in charge of another prison up there. And she told me that she hired to work for her, or they sent to work for her, this man that I changed his name, but I regarded him as Ron Rush, my assistant warden.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a different name, of course. So I said to her, "Oh, you had Ron Rush working for you?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "How did that go?" She said, "He was so disloyal, I fired him." It took my breath away. I didn't know I could fire anybody. They're all civil servants. So I
Amazing.
Never assumed I could get rid of anybody.
Amazing. Boy, your education was one day right after the other. Let's
you know
talk.
I could do that. I could do this job again 1,000% better because at my age, of course, I'm a lot wiser. And I'm on to a lot of this stuff. So I look back on it and I think it's amazing that I didn't do more harm than good.
Well, you had the Manson group, the Manson women that were in your jail, and they were very, very interesting personalities. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, when I first got there, they were being incarcerated in a small hut that was in the center of the campus. And one of the things the governor had told me that my job was of this group of very, notorious women that I had. I had about 10 of them
mm-hmm.
that were not just Manson people. Of the notorious women, I was to personally make every decision about them, what they would eat, when they would get out of their cell, when they would work, what they would do. So I thought the first thing I should do was go and meet them. And there were, at that time, I had 4 Manson family members. 3 of them were incarcerated after having the death penalty withdrawn when the laws changed.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that you read about in the book Helter Skelter and the ones that everybody knows. That was Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Leslie Van Houten. The fourth one that I had was Mary Bruner. And Mary Bruner was Charles Manson's wife and the mother of his child. And nobody's ever heard of Mary Bruner. But she was there, and she had to be treated a little bit differently because she wasn't part of the Sharon Tate murder situation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I found that after being in my prison for a period of time and off drugs, that they were very delightful, nice young women, just like your daughter and my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to hate them or think of them as being awful people. So that's kind of how I felt about them, and I wanted to make a situation for them, since I knew they would never get out, that was livable. In other words, I wanted them to go to school and have opportunities to do a few things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did, and I was pretty popular, actually, with the inmates there. They all liked me a lot.
Well, you weren't responding with the male mentality. You were coming from a different positioning. Again, it's sort of like being a mother.
That's right.
When you say you are going to be held accountable for the deeds that you've done, this has been the verdict by law, and you go into so many different aspects of working in the prison, which I found absolutely amazing. How was it, and what was it, that caused you to retreat from this positioning? You were there for a year, and why did you feel it was important to write this book?
Well, I had an interview immediately following my leaving the prison, and that was transcribed, and I had it in a brown envelope on my closet shelf, and I came across it recently, and I thought, you know, a lot of people have wanted to hear my stories about my experience, and maybe it's time for me to tell some stories about this. So that motivated me to write the book now. I wasn't trying to make money, but a lot of people have really wanted to know more about this.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened at the end was we had a riot, and the department anticipated we were going to have a riot, and that's one of the reasons I was hired, an outsider to take the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did have the riot. It was around Christmas time, and it was not preventable. And I got called to the prison about 7:30 at night by my staff, and they said, there's a riot going on. I think you better get back here. So I got in the car. My husband drove me back. And as I approached the prison, I could hear a lot of shouting and screaming and glass being broken and a lot of noise. And I could see that they had set the place on fire. They were playing frisbee with the broken windows, and everything was out of control. My little staff was huddled in the front of the prison in the administration building, and they were all kind of waiting to see what I was going to do. And, of course, I am not trained in riot control. But, fortunately, my husband, who trained the Green Berets and who is a Special Forces officer, retired, knew exactly what to do. So after standing around and giving me a chance to take charge for a while, he finally said, "That's enough of this." And he grabbed a shotgun off the counter and said to whoever was standing around, "Follow me." And he went into the yard and put the riot down. And nobody got hurt. Nobody got shot. And it was phenomenal that he was able to calm everything down so readily.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that happened was I got a letter from the governor's office saying, "Well, we heard your husband was in the yard and nobody gave him permission to be in the yard. What was he doing?" And so my husband wrote back and said, "I know I'm not authorized to be in the yard. However, I'm a retired military officer, and my wife's prison was boarding federal prisoners. And so as the only federal officer present, I went into the yard to make sure the federal prisoners were safe," which, of course, is a fib. But it, the governor wrote back and said, "Well, okay, but don't do it again." So that was a really
amazing,
funny letter. At any
amazing
rate, we rounded up all the troublemakers, and we had hearings to make sure we had the right one. And the hearings were a panel of our correctional officers and counselors. And I chaired all the hearings. It took us a couple weeks until we could figure out who had participated, because that's a felony to do that in a prison.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you right there, Brooke. People are going to have to get your book to find out the rest of this fabulous story. I mean, it really is interesting, and you've got so many points of information. We'd probably talk for 5 hours, but we're out of time. Now, I want people to know that your book is called The Accidental Warden. Your name again is Brooke Carey. And it's about her being for a year as a warden of a prison. Now, this is in the 70s, so things have changed a bit since then. But there's a lot that hasn't changed, and I think you'll find the book absolutely interesting. The website is accidentalwarden.com. You can go there. You can find out all kinds of information. Brooke, this has been a delight. Thank you for being my guest.
You did an excellent job, too, with good questions.
Thank you, ma'am. That's what I love to do. It's been a pleasure again. The Accidental Warden by Brooke Carey. Go to her website, theaccidentalwarden.com, and you'll find out more about this fascinating subject. And we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. By the way, I need to make a correction on Brooke's website. It's accidental-warden.com. That's her website. So accidental-warden.com is where you go to get information. Hey, phone lines are open. That's right. You can call in and chat with me if you would be interested in doing so. Of course, I'd love to give you a reading on the air if that's what you would like. Here's the toll-free number to call into, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time caller or listener, I'm so glad you're able to join us, but all I want from you when you call in, when I answer the line, is your first name, and I want to know what part of the country or the world you're calling in from. If you're in the United States, I'd like to know the city and the state. And if you're in another country, I'd love to know the city and the country that you're calling from. And then sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive. And then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question. After I give you my bit of insight, then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Also, I need to let those of you, there are a few people that have sent me some emails regarding the free passes to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. To my horror, I found that something had happened with my system, and a whole slew of emails have gone into spam. So I found you, don't think I'm ignoring you, and I will be in touch with you within the next couple of days, and I also will send you your passes. But I was just shocked at how sometimes the computer systems end up sending stuff into your spam file. So just as a word of informational advice, if you have not checked your spam file periodically and someone says, well, I sent you this, check spam. You may find your computer system is popping it over in there instead of putting stuff in the inbox. I still haven't figured out how they make the selection, but anyway, I now have to go through my spam file and put in all the things that are not spam, and then toss out the rest that are. But that's just something that I just discovered before I went on the air, so I needed to let you know. Now, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair is coming up the first three weekends in August. I have a few passes left, but if you would like to get a free family pass, I would be delighted to send that to you. All I need you to do is say, the Donna Sebo Show, free ticket or free pass to the Ren Fair. Just make it so I can identify it and then highlight it as an urgent message so that when I see it, when I go through the Buku emails that I get, then I'll be able to notice it. And I will also check the spam file just in case it burps and hiccups and sends something over in that direction. But I want you to know the Renaissance Fantasy Fair is an absolutely awesome event. It is just absolutely terrific. And it's the first three weekends. And you can go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com, and find out all the details. It's being held this year at the Maris Farms in Buckley, Washington. And I'm going to have a booth there, and it is going to have bright yellow banners. They're huge with gigantic red lions on them. That's my logo for the Ren Fair. And it's always a delight because I'm able to be out there, talk with all kinds of people, and then do little mini sessions for people as well, and I'll have a bunch of books. But this is an event that's just magical. And you hear the ad every day and then all through August until the event is finished. But it is just absolutely a wonderful experience. So I have these free passes. You need to send me an email or call my 800 number. And just in case something happens to the email, follow up with a phone call. It doesn't hurt, so I'll be sure to get that pass off to you. Donna Sebo here again. The telephone number is 888-815-9756 if you want to call in and chat with me. I'd be delighted to do this. I got an email from Carol, and I got such a kick out of this. Carol said this, oh, I just love this, so I had to pass it along to you, Donna. It reads as follows. Recently, in a large French city, a poster featuring a young, thin, and tanned woman appeared in the window of a gym. It said, this summer, do you want to be a mermaid or a whale? A middle-aged woman whose physical characteristics did not match those of the woman on the poster responded publicly to the question posed by this particular gym. And this is what she said. To whom it may concern, whales are always surrounded by friends, dolphins, sea lions, curious humans. They have an active sex life, they get pregnant, and have adorable baby whales. They have a wonderful time with dolphins, stuffing themselves with shrimp. They play and swim in the sea, seeing wonderful places like Patagonia, the Barents Sea, and the coral reefs of Polynesia. Whales are wonderful singers, and even have recorded CDs. They are incredible creatures, and virtually have no predators other than humans. They are loved, protected, and admired by almost everyone in the world. Mermaids don't exist. If they did exist, they'd be lining up outside the offices of Argentinian psychoanalysts, due to identity crisis, fish or human. They don't have a sex life because they kill men who get close to them, not to mention, how could they have sex? Therefore, they don't have kids either. Not to mention, who wants to get close to a girl who smells like a fish store? The choice is perfectly clear to me. I want to be a whale. P.S. We are in an age when media puts into our heads the idea that only skinny people are beautiful. But I prefer to enjoy an ice cream cone with my kids, a good dinner with a man who makes me shiver, and coffee with my friends. With time we gain weight because we accumulate so much information and wisdom in our heads that when there's no more room, it distributes out to the rest of our bodies. So we aren't heavy. We're just enormously cultured, educated, and happy. Beginning today, when I look at my butt in the mirror, I will think, good gosh, look at how smart I am. I had to share that with you. I mean, that should make just about anybody feel good. Maybe not the people at the gym, but for anyone that feels like the Battle of the Bulge has been the story of their life, I think they would enjoy it. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 if you'd like to call in and chat with me. Well, this is who we have got coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to figure out how we can retire rich and happy. Forget all of the mucky messes that are going on. Jeff Harris is going to fill us in on what we can do to pick up from wherever we are at any given moment and move forward for that financial level of independence we all yearn for. Also, on Thursday, we're going to be talking about water. Water is really the staff of life. Every living thing on this planet has to have it. But due to so many things that have gone on through the years, we're becoming aware that we are poisoning our water on so many levels. My guest on Thursday, Lono Ho'ala, who is a specialist, he was in Hawaii for a number of years. This is his area of expertise. He's written this book saying, don't drink the water, because he's wanting to educate people about what they can do so that they can have good, healthy water. And believe it or not, sometimes the water you get in the bottles that you're paying a fortune for isn't any better than what's coming out of the tap. But Lono is really going to give us some inside tracks on this. And then on Friday, a special broadcast will be coming from live. Well, the show will be done live in Las Vegas. My guest is Helios Dundulakis. And Helios is a man who is in his 80s today. This is his true story about how he was trained by the United States government to be a spy. And Helios is a Greek. He was a teenager during the Second World War. He is a wonderful man. And we are going to be listening to his fascinating story. And they are making a movie of his life. It is just absolutely awesome. He and his brother, how they became two of the underground fighters in Europe that enabled us to win a war. So this is just absolutely incredible. The lineup we have this week, very unique, I know, but I sort of like unique things, don't you? Life is meant to be interesting, and just about everybody has a story. Maybe you have a story that you need to share with the rest of the world. Think of my guest today. How many women have become wardens in the prison system? How many women have gone through the evolution of change that my guest, Brooke Carey, went through? Fascinating stuff, gives you a different perspective. And that's what reading will do for you. Now, I know you're not like me reading 400 to 600 books a year, and yes, I actually read them with a highlighter pen, a yellow one, in hand to make my notes. But it's something that it's so important to realize that when you read, you expand your world. Get to know your library. Go in. Read old books, newer publications. Recognize that the more you educate yourself, the more opportunity you are going to have to understand how you can make better decisions in your life. If you do not teach yourself and learn how to think and to reason, school isn't necessarily going to give it to you, but you can give that gift to yourself. You're going to be more empowered as an individual, and you'll know how to ask the right questions. That's something else they don't teach you in school. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. We're going to be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's right, you can give me a buzz. Oh, and don't forget, I have those free passes to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. And if you want a family activity that you can take Uncle Harry to and Aunt Jane and your dog and everything else, just don't bring your fish. They won't be happy out there. It's going to be pretty hot. All you need to do is remember this is something that is totally, totally different from anything else you've ever attended. It is a lot of fun. And you'll meet some of the wildest, wackiest people and also some superb craftspeople, craftsmen and craftswomen. Oh, the talent that these people have. And you step back into history and leave your cell phones behind and just have fun, eat good food, and enjoy good conversation and a lot of great activities. So go to WashingtonRenFair.com, and I've got some family passes. Give me a call at my office, 800-872-8852. And for heaven's sake, if you call my office and you're on a cell phone, would you repeat your phone number twice, please? Because those cell phones cut out. People have been leaving messages, but I can't understand the messages. They go boop, 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 and it's gone. So make sure you leave your telephone number twice when you call. Or send me an email, send it to donna@delphiinternational.com, and I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. And if you send me an email and you don't hear from me within 48 hours, I want you to get in touch with me at my office, 800-872-8852, and I'll pop that family day pass off to you in the mail. And I do need your contact information to be able to do that. Well, I guess everybody has their own idea of what they want to do to keep fit, to stay in shape. And there is a young man, Quinn Baumberger, and he's from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And in May of 2007, he decided he was going to do something that nobody else had done before. What did he do? He cycled for 9 months and traveled more than 19,000, you heard me right, 19,000 miles. It's the length of the Americas from Dead Horse, Alaska to Ushuaia, Argentina. Now, in this journey, and I've got a picture of him in front of me, he fixed 50 flat tires, he was robbed twice, sprained his ankle in Nicaragua, which put him out of action for 2 weeks, and to replace his shirts because they'd wear out, he found shirts on the road, which that's just amazing to me. And so he'd pick them up and he'd wear them himself. But 19,000 miles on a bike, boy, I just don't know how he did it. It's just absolutely amazing. Also, Lynn Cox, she's from sunny Southern California. She decided she was going to do something a bit different. 25 minutes, 1.2 miles of swimming through the polar ice water along the Antarctic shoreline. Now, those water temperatures cause you to go into hypothermia in 60 seconds. Well, you know, actually they say 5 minutes, but it's less than that for most people. I wouldn't even join the Polar Bear Club. Amazing. Great. I mean, people do some interesting things, don't they? Let's go to our first caller. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, dear. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
My initials are J.M.
And where are you?
I just recently got married, so I was wondering if you could tell me anything about my marriage.
Well, why don't you tell me where you're calling from? What part of the country?
I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. Boy, I love that city, but I wish they had done a better job with their road signs. I've never known a place where I could get lost so fast. It is unbelievable. My husband and I went around the Pentagon 5 times before we finally got on the right road to where we were supposed to go. It's just a hoot. Anyway, gives you something to talk about when you have nothing else, I guess. Okay, JM, the first thing I'm looking at, when you're talking about your marriage, I'm getting an image of the two of you in my mind, and it's as if you are marathoners. You are both people that have very strong personalities, and you have the desire, both of you, to be leaders in your own ways. And what you need to do is understand that neither one is superior to the other. You both bring something to the table as individuals. It's unique. And you both have a lot of strength, and I feel that you would be a tremendous team if you were to find a common interest where you could be doing something together that empowers other people's lives.
Ah.
You both are argumentative. You like having discussions, and you don't necessarily have to agree with each other, but I want you to understand, this is not a negative statement that I'm making. If both of you will use the strengths that you've got to empower each other, to think more clearly about things that maybe you didn't have an understanding about, you are going to find that you are going to become, if you take each other as individuals and accept each other as you are and not try to change each other, you're going to find an adaptation here of strength and a harmony that is going to enable you to, as a team, make some very significant changes. And the two of you actually could do very, very well in business together as long as you were not in the same room all the time.
Wow. That's hitting home.
Okay. That's very important. But both of you have to respect each other's individuality. You can have a very interesting marriage. Is it going to be peaceful and quiet like a Donna Reed special? You got to be kidding. Neither one of you want that. But there is a zest in your marriage that you can have that nobody else will have, and that is honesty. So I want you to enjoy it. Hon, I'm just about out of time. I have to say I don't even have time to take a question from you. Can you call back?
I sure will.
All right, dear. I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we're out of time.
Okay, thank you so much.
You are welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time, but we'll be back right here, same time, same place, tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Nobody else. You are your own boss. God bless. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.